I'm not crying. You're crying. Shut up. Hey there, Ruby fans. Welcome to another episode of the Ruby After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are talking about Volume 5, Chapters 5 and 6, Necessary Sacrifice, and Known by Its Song. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
I'm not crying. It's fine. I just have lots of tears in my eyes, unrelated to this situation. It's fine.
I don't believe you.
No, don't call me out on my blatant lies.
It'll just make me cry more.
We literally have a video of us crying on my YouTube channel. Like, that went up today.
Just one?
Most recently.
There you go.
Well, anyway, hey, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome back to the Ruby After Show. We're doing a double feature tonight like we used to back way back when.
Last
when
episodes season. Were 5 minutes apiece.
But apologies in advance. We are going to have to zoom through some of this because of the break last time. But, guys, let's not waste any more time. Let me introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
Hi, I'm the photoshopped remains of Mark Donica. It looks like I'm photoshopped behind this desk.
The CNN hologram, Mark
I'm
Donica.
Really short. I'm short in the chair, so like having my arms up is like a kid at the adults table. Like, I don't know, it's weird. So I'm just going to be weird. My arms are going to be weirdly under the table. You can find me on Twitter at Mark Donica. Also, thank you to everybody who joined us at Inventory Full PT on Twitch last week. We streamed Ruby Grim Eclipse, the first part of it, and probably when we're gone for a Christmas break, we'll do the second part of it. So,
you promise?
Yeah.
Yay!
So, in case you missed it, if you want to see some fun hijinks with Megan, myself, and freaking contributor Stacey Shuttleworth, make sure you go to Inventory Full PT. It's in the highlights. We saved the whole thing, so go check it out. There is some Ruby talk, but it's usually a lot of there's a lot of Grim here. So,
and my computer froze.
Yes. Oh, we lost Megan.
I was in Colorado at the time.
Yeah, good.
So.
Fun.
Speaking of, to Mark's left, the lovely Katie Cullen.
Hi, all my buddies. I may or may not actually be here. You'll never know. You can follow me all over the social medias at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. And to my roundabout left,
I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at the Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. Guys, be sure to follow Patrick at P to the D's on Twitter and Stacy at Stacy Shuttles. We are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RWBYABTV, not the other way around. Just so you guys know. And Katie's got you guys covered on the live chat. Guys, I know that there's a lot to unpack with these two episodes. These two episodes were very, very exposition heavy. That being said, I'm going to go ahead and say, let's go ahead and just start with Menagerie and kind of break down what happened at Menagerie. Are we at all surprised that Blake and Son's endeavor wasn't super successful?
No. We have a clipboard. Please sign up to fight a war that isn't yours. Yeah. Having done the job with the clipboard before, that's never fun. That's never fun.
Well, yeah. Even if you're out in public and you see people with really good causes, no matter if it's something that you're invested in personally or not, like the old Greenpeace or what have you, there's just one thing that they say or one way that they say it is like, oh, this is a bad decision.
Yeah.
This is a bad idea. You're not. I understand what you're doing and I support it, but I can't support it more than just saying that I support it.
Yeah, there are a lot of, like, I do not envy a lot of canvassers, and I had a friend who was a canvasser as one of her part-time jobs in college, and that is taxing. Mm-hmm. Like, even just doing, like, charity bake sales that I've done in the past, I'm like, oh, man, this is exhausting trying to get people's attention, to get them to buy goods to go to a good cause. Even that's exhausting. I can't imagine what it's like trying to get people, to recruit people, essentially, to do a potentially violent protest.
It's a militia. They're trying to make a militia. That's a little rough.
Yeah, no.
And again, these are a whole bunch of people, like Blake says, that came here to get away from all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was really insightful getting to see a different side of Menagerie, because we've been at, like, marketplaces a little bit before, but we haven't really gotten to know the people of Menagerie outside of that kind of little press conference that we got to see. So that was kind of cool. For me, a personal highlight, kind of getting to see the side of Menagerie, was getting to see a few different types of faunus, and we'll talk about one a little bit
that
later.
That guy.
But guys, there are swimming and flying faunas types.
Merfaunas.
That is so cool. Yeah.
If My Little Pony has taught us anything, you can make a creature out of anything. That's the one thing that
it taught
us.
And then you can make a toy out of it.
Exactly. Marketing. Speaking of toys, anybody see the new... Well, we won't talk about it a lot, but there's a new Ruby Chibi short that, if you, in case you missed it, you should go check it out.
I haven't watched it yet.
It's really fun.
I'm so excited.
It's an ad, but it's really fun.
Our recording schedule has been interesting.
It's literally a commercial. So it's not necessarily an episode of Ruby Chibi as much as it is a commercial, but it's still, they count it as an episode of Ruby Chibi.
You know what? I'll take it. Mm. It's a Christmas miracle. but
watch it before you say that.
Something Nora discovers coffee.
Yeah. Essentially, it's part two of that episode.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. That sounds fantastic. So, okay, let's talk about this. So, yeah, their sort of attempt to recruit people to this cause is not in any way successful. But one thing that we do get is some really great character development between Sun and Blake. Mark, let's go ahead and start with you. What did you think of this exchange that they had? Because I found it to be exceedingly endearing.
Oh, very endearing. It's a lot of classic Sun. It's the way that we got to know Sun back in season two. God, this has been a long show. not this has been long, but long. But this is, it's less of the... It's the same character, but as of late, it seems like we've been seeing a lot of the sillier side. And while there has been a heart behind it, it's just been, it's less goofy and more endearing. And this is a wonderful performance both for the character and for the actor. I liked the scene.
It's nice to move away from comic relief for Sun, even though he's really good at it. And the kind of meet the parents thing that he's got going on with Gira is just a thing of wonder and glory. But I really appreciated this, and I loved the bit of the conversation about, have you ever met someone and they just embody a word for you? Because I am an English major and a words person, and I adore that sort of thing. And categorizing Adam as spite is just perfect.
Yeah, I feel like that is an excellent word to describe him. Do you guys think that earnest is a good word for Sun?
Yeah.
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 Do you guys have, if you could pick different words that are air appropriate for Adam and Sun, what would you pick?
No, you're asking me to think.
That's more than one word.
And air appropriate is also the problem when we get to Adam.
I can think of a few words for Adam, but none of them are air appropriate.
There's one that's air appropriate. It reminds me of a Jack Mule. So I'll say that. And for Sun, just useless. No, I'm kidding.
Hot.
That's, yeah. I decided to go with the one. Yeah, because it's Menagerie. Everybody's hot.
You're not wrong.
Yeah. But yeah, I would say I think Ernest fits in pretty well.
Yeah. And for Adam, I was initially thinking rage, and then when she said spite, it's like, nope, that's better.
Now here's
you can accomplish things out of spite, but it should not be your be-all and end-all.
Now, here's a question. Blake assigned one-word descriptions to her team. What word do you think describes Blake?
Passionate.
Passion's good. It was so fleeting. Let's go with that. Kitty wins.
I feel like when she's at her lowest, I feel like remorse is a word that I would attribute to her. But for the most part, I like after this whole conversation, I go with the word she originally attributed to Adam, which is justice. I feel like justice burns in her soul.
And she's going to have like a great Saiyaman-esque costume where she gets all Ginyu Force-y and yeah.
Oh
no, I don't believe it.
God.
She might very well have a speech prepared for Ilya, though.
Okay, but Team Ruby is a Sentai squad.
Sure.
Like, sign me up.
Yeah.
Just sign me
up. I would
make
watch
that Ruby
TV
short. I don't even care. I need it.
Jean's the dork tech guy who is like the Alpha 9 or Alpha 5. I can never remember. Yeah, that one.
I feel like he was 9 at one point, and I feel like they're different models.
Several iterations of the same
I
Alpha.
I think Alpha 5 was the first one.
Though. He was.
The OG.
Invader Zim, yeah. But talking about this, it's the relationship between Sun and Blake that has basically made it so that Blake is not willing to give up on Lady Illia. Katie, do you think that's a fruitless endeavor?
I don't think so, especially given what we saw a little later in the episode. Like, I think there's still some part of Illia that's like, no, I don't really want to give up this friendship. No, she still means something to me. And then we're going to see that tested something awful. So,
Mark?
I think there's a chance to save everybody, really. I think there, no matter how deep you will have to go for that, sometimes, this sounds really dark. When it comes to a show like this and a type of story like this that involves war, sometimes the way to save somebody is to end them. So when it comes
you from yourself.
I'm going to say that when it comes to somebody like Adam. When it comes to Illia, she's not past the point of no return. She still has left. See, look, it look weird and my arms are just extending.
What happened?
Nothing. Something unrelated. Something unrelated. Malachroma. Go-Go Power Ranger.
R-N-J-R.
Very nice.
R-N-J-R-E-O.
I don't think Illia's past saving. I think she still has a chance.
Yeah, I feel like it's weird to say I don't feel like anybody is beyond redemption, but there's a choice there. And Adam, I don't think, would ever make the choice to be redeemed, or he's just so far in his delusion that he feels like he's genuine.
There's no redemption. For Adam, there's no redemption. The best villains don't think that they're villains.
Yeah,
he's the hero of his story.
He has been wronged, and the rest of the world needs to burn in retribution.
Sure. You know who he reminds me of? And this is kind of crossing the Rooster Teeth streams a little bit, but Sharkface.
In terms of just like that, I was wronged and everyone else needs to pay.
And again, crossing the streams, you know who he reminds me of?
Who?
Space Kid.
What?
No, I'm kidding.
I was going to say, you're going to have to explain.
We're having some trouble with our Mark feed right now.
Oh no, the hologram is on the fritz.
That's me.
But yeah, let's
talk
Space
Let's
Kid.
Dive into that.
Let's dive into that. This is we're going to do a deep dive into camp now. But talking about Adam and Lady Illia, we do get this scene with Corsic and Fennec having just received a message from Adam and basically imparting this knowledge onto Illia of like, hey, some good news. Adam totally wants Blake alive. Isn't that so great? Also, yeah,
murder her family while you're at it.
Other people, not as much, but Blake is coming alive. That's going to be great.
This is some full-on the greater good stuff here. And they scare me about as much as Adam scares me, but in very different reasons. Adam is the guy who would tie you to a chair and set the room on fire. These two would just poison you while having a nice conversation with you and watch you suffocate. Like, two very different ways of accomplishing murder, but you are just as dead.
I don't think they're entirely ready. I don't think they're mustache twirlers quite yet.
No,
I think
they're snakes.
I think that they're very much, they still, much like Adam has way past and is right in his own mind. There's no redemption that he needs. I think that Corsic and Fennec, they're still looking for that redemption and they're willing to do anything for it, but they're still trying to do the, they still think that they're doing positive. They're not quite as far down as Adam. I think once the war starts to break out, that they will immediately put their tail between their legs. Like, we didn't mean for all of this to happen. It was for the greater good of the fun.
I disagree completely. Mm-hmm. Like, and for those of you going, they're foxes. I know they're foxes. We're talking metaphorical snakes.
What does the fox say?
Awful, awful things, evidently. But I think if Adam is the Joffrey of this series, then these two are the Littlefinger. They are the schemers. They are the manipulators. They are the string pullers behind the throne. They know exactly what they're doing, and they will regret nothing.
We got a reaction image already. If you go to RWBYABTV, thank you, Malachroma. This is fine.
This is fine.
From Fennec. With, yeah. I mean, having the ears go down too was
amazing. That's pretty great. I do think they know exactly what they're doing, and they're talking like Adam is a stopgap until they can find someone else, which he is. Yeah. But they absolutely sanctioned this murder, and they are down for whatever. Mm-hmm. And they say it's for the greater good, but I wouldn't be surprised if they just want to keep someone in their control and run the show behind the throne.
Sorry, that just made me think in their dating profile they put down for whatever. But I
DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth.
I see that as well. I definitely see that, and I understand that. If like the thing that got me thinking the way that I did was the way that after Ilya leaves and after everything leaves, when they're back on with Adam, and he's just like, Dad sent me to my room early. I'm just totally steamed, and he's freaking out. And they're like,
and then he goes, I'm good.
Yeah. So he does. The way that they react to him is just like trying to put a cover on the pot that's starting to boil over. Yeah, I think that there are definitely some things along Adam's way that they're willing to do and others that they're not. I wonder if they know that Ilya can't do it. Or they think that Ilya won't be able to do it, and they're going to use that as a way to go, Adam Taurus was wrong, or whatever. They're like,
or if this is a test of her loyalty.
Sure. Either way.
I feel like my big takeaway from this is that Ilya did know about Sienna Khan. That first and foremost, mm-hmm. she did know. If there was any question about that, that is out the window. Second of all, I kind of agree with your guys' assessment that they kind of view Adam more as a means to an end.
Yeah.
Because when there's the question of, like, do we really think he's qualified? And it's like, for now. Mm-hmm. Adam is very much, as far as I can tell from their perspective, a for now plan. Looking at these two, I'm guessing, and maybe I'm wrong in making this assumption, but I'm guessing they are hedging their bets. I mean, they might be tied in more with Salem than we're aware.
That is possible.
Maybe that's just an assumption on my part. But the other thing is, too, I think, to your point, I think about whether or not they think Ilya can do it, that I agree. I feel like if it was just within her hands, they know that she can't murder Blake's family. And that's why they very much insisted, don't worry, we have our brothers and sisters there to help you. Isn't that going to be so great? So it's
going to be a mess.
It's
murder.
Both testing her loyalty, but also very much a power play of, like, if you don't, there are going to be other people there who will, and they might end you too. So, I don't know. But yeah, talking about this flying Faunus. Oh my gosh, guys. He had, like, demon wings.
Pretty cool. Yuma?
Yeah.
He was a bat Faunus, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apparently, Team 4-Star guys are just doing all sorts of voices for Ruby this season and last season. And I am just adoring it. We'll get to more of that. But the bad news about finding out about this flying Faunus, as cool as that is that Gira's messenger is now super dead. And we also find out that word about Sienna Khan's death hasn't necessarily reached everybody yet, and they want to prevent that information from getting to Menagerie for as long as they can. Mm. Now, again, maybe this is delving a little bit too much into predictions, but do we think members of Blake's family are going to be killed before the season's out?
It's possible, and the thought just makes me so sad.
The only swerve that I can imagine them doing I have an unimaginable swerve, something that I don't think will happen, but one that they could do that would just shock the world, is Sun saving Gira's life at the cost of his own.
Ooh.
Now, I don't think they'll do that, but I think that's possible. Ooh. To show, and I think that would do more for the Menagerie cause than if Gira dies. And yeah, it would make Blake that much more of a what's the word I'm looking for?
figure?
Tragic character.
Ah.
And I, not to say that the death of either of her parents wouldn't make her a tragic character as well, but I think that having Gira lead the charge is important, but it would also make sense. Hey, this is the next generation of the Faunus. Have Blake and Sun lead it, but that's the only thing I can see apart from somebody clearly dying.
Okay, we still got a lot to cover.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we have
a lot of time in which to do it.
Let's go ahead and leave Menagerie and move on over to Oscar's training, because he had this incredible scene with Ruby, where she basically finally, both of them kind of break, I don't want to say break down emotionally, but he has an emotional outburst, and she actually gets a moment to kind of decompress and actually explain her feelings, because ever since the end of Volume 3, she hasn't really had the chance to express her feelings much out loud to anybody outside of a letter she wrote to Yang. So, we actually have a person on Twitter. I'm going to look at the name. Miraculous Corazon.
Yeah, Miraculous on Corazon. Twitter,
sent us a Tumblr theory about whether or not Oscar actually did that intentionally to see how Ruby would react. Like, he wasn't actually angry with her, or if he is scared, he's downplaying it. But just to see what keeps her going.
It was a well-put-together theory, but I'm not entirely certain that I buy it. Just because this is something people do. Aside from his conversations with Ozpin, we haven't gotten any letters from Oscar. We haven't gotten his internal monologue as blatantly as we've gotten some other characters. So it's entirely possible that he's been sitting on this for a while, and it's only just now when Ruby, you know, says combat ready, obviously has this moment of, oh, we screamed, there were noises. Obviously has this moment where it hurts her and then keeps trying to push on. And that is the straw that breaks the camel's back for Oscar. Just like, how do you do this? How do you function? How do you work?
What if it wasn't Oscar?
Ah! I know, right?
What if it was Ozpin?
That thought crossed my mind.
But we usually get the voice thing when that happens.
And he knows that they know that they usually get the voice thing. We've talked before on the show about Ozpin taking control when he wants. And not to say that it would, you know, that proves that he's an evil character, blah, 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 whatever. But he definitely needs to be in control of a situation. If these kids are going to fight a war for him, because so far, as we'll find out, we don't have anybody else other than these kids. He needs to know that they're going to be ready, and that's one way or another. That does take away a nice moment that we get with Oscar and Ruby. But if we get a later reveal of, hey, remember that talk we had? No.
But that would have been the conversation with Ozpin after the conversation with Ruby would have been very different, mm-hmm. were that the case. Had Oscar not initiated it, had Oscar not been present for that conversation, mm-hmm. I think that little bit would have been very different.
Okay.
I could see it going both of those ways. Honestly, I see all three being a possibility, yeah. of it just being an emotional, you know, outburst, or, you know, or it could very well have been an intentional move on Oscar's part, because he and Ozpin are very like-minded. Or I could also see Ozpin trying to make a point to Oscar, because we don't necessarily get all of their internal dialogues. It could have been him trying to make a point to Oscar and taking control of the wheel for a little bit. So it could be any one of those things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's Ruby's desire to help people that keeps her moving forward. And you know, in memory of her friends. And when she said to keep moving forward, I may have cried a little. It's fine.
Oh, that was rough.
That was rough. But I think again, kind of tied in with the theme of this entire season as a whole, you know, Volume 4 was all about loss, and Volume 5 is learning how to move on in spite of that loss. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the real-life story of the studio is very much tied in with that.
Oh, absolutely.
So, that was beautiful and heart-wrenching, but also, I think the characters needed it. So yeah, do we have any final comments on that particular interaction before we move on over to the bandits?
I cried.
Murder.
Yes, let's continue with the murder. There was a lot of murder in these episodes, or at least talk about it.
You know me, I always love talking about murder.
Planned murder.
I'm learning a lot tonight.
So yeah, let's talk about, I guess, a long overdue conversation with the mom of the year.
Oh my god, this woman, it's very hard to put a character in front of me where I immediately go, wow, I hate literally everything about you. But they've accomplished that with Raven, because wow.
Yeah, I think there'll be more to talk about next week.
Neither of us have seen it yet.
Yeah, I think there'll be more to talk about next week.
I'm sure there will.
But from the way that all of the characters and all of the situations have been presented to us so far, of course there's gonna be some stuff that we haven't been told, and it's a great story and character thing to go, well, they haven't told you the whole story. Sorry, that's my Raven. That's my Raven. It's not that great. My apologies.
Sounds uncanny, but, like Anna.
Yeah, just like Anna Holland. That's what happened when I met her. I said, pleasure to meet you. And she went, oh my god, did you? I know I voiced Raven, but did you do any like pickups?
She did such a good job, though.
Yeah, no,
she's excellent.
All of this is really fantastic, and it leaves us all wondering, well, how much haven't they been told? And
so much.
Yang seemed so defiant in knowing what she knows, and in all of it, knowing who Raven is and the type of person that she is and the type of mom that she's been. Mm-hmm. It makes sense to how Yang has been reacting. It makes sense, and I think it was also a look into Weiss's relationship with her mother, because we don't know it, but we can only tell from how she reacts to this stuff.
Yeah, I think just looking at the way Weiss reacts to things, it says a lot about her relationship with her mom and a lot about her relationship with her sister, too. Tears, it's fine. But my big question here is, how much of this is Raven trying to be manipulative? Because we've seen she does have... I hate her, but you can definitely... She has her reasons. Not necessarily good reasons, but you know she has her reasons. And she's right. A lot of the truth has been conveniently left out for these girls. You know, whether or not Ruby and Yang actually managed to pry is another thing, too. Like, it could be that, you know, Ty and Crow never mentioned anything because they didn't ask. But I feel like they probably asked some stuff. But,
well, and this is also something that you don't want to throw on the backs of 15 and 18 year olds. Like, you're still a kid, you're just barely an adult, none of you are full-fledged huntsmen or huntresses yet. Like, can we chill?
They haven't experienced enough to believe what could happen in front of their eyes. That's why the talk last season about the brothers and about magic and about the sorcerer and the maidens and all that, that's where they're like, are you kidding me? Like, all of that stuff was hard to believe. So that makes sense. Makes sense.
Kind of interesting finding out that the ability to turn into birds, having that animorph ability, apparently, that Raven views it more as like a curse that was done to her as opposed to a gift bestowed. We don't know what sort of voodoo Ozpin worked to be able to get them to have that ability, but it's the way she uses to display that magic is real, which is still a weird conversation for me because I'm like, aren't semblances magic? But that's neither here nor there.
Well, because no, that's the thing is they're presented. They've always been presented as like a natural part of growing up. Yeah, so
a known tenet of the universe.
Magic yeah. isn't real.
Well, no, it's some yeah. it's something it's something physical that happens. Yeah, so that sort of stuff has been explained, but the you have limits on that. No, I can turn into a bird. I also think that stuff would be a natural progression for a world that has semblances, as well as a world that has half animal people. I don't that wouldn't be like, oh, so magic is real. And that's why you turn into a bird. I need something. Your semblance could be turning into a bird. We don't know the limit of semblances yet. Especially now that we know that they evolve.
I just had a weird flash in my brain about Watts doing Frankenstein-esque experiments on faunus and people and animals. And it
Schnee family
sent,
goes back.
It
goes real back.
A chill down my spine.
I'm absolutely certain that he has, if we're going the Frankenstein route. We were chatting about this a little bit in our reaction, about wondering how the whole bird thing came about and whether or not it was something that was originally done for Crow and rebounded onto Raven because they're twins, because his semblance is bad luck, because of a connection, because of anything. So he could be like, yes, I wanted this. And she could be like, hell to the no. This was not supposed to occur.
This season being, or these past two seasons being one of explaining the world, I figure it's sooner rather than later that we'll get some sort of an explanation.
Yeah. And I guess looking at Raven as a character and knowing that she and Crow initially enlisted in Beacon for the sole purpose of learning how to kill Huntsmen to the benefit of the bandits. Now, do we think at any given point in time Raven's mission changed, that she decided, yeah, I am a part of Team Stark instead of the bandits, but then when finding out about the bigger picture, that's when she went, nope, I'd rather go back to being a big fish in a small pond and lead the bandits. Bye, everybody, I can't deal.
I don't know. I have no idea. I want some flashback episodes.
Oh, God.
I want some full-on Legend of Korra original Avatar. Give me two episodes that are just Team Stark focused. Let's do this. Let's go.
Oz bloodbending.
Oh, God!
Just saying.
No!
Oh, that went places.
Yes. Why not?
Oz running some shadow games.
I just wanted to mention William Benson in chat saying Dr. Watts equals Dr. Moreau.
Oh!
I mean, Frankenstein and Moreau would be a terrifying, like, because we know that they like to combine characters combine literary characters into one.
Oh my God.
That would be amazing.
That would be so unsettling. No! I don't want to go down that route.
We had a nice little Cam Griffin on chat gave us a screen cap of a Tumblr post. Just, Raven, reason number two, look what I can do, turns into a bird. Yang, what does that have to do with...
No,
she's
got
a point.
Yeah.
Bless you for that one. I will always go for a good Emperor's New Groove reference.
It is delightful. But for me, I have a lot of questions because I'm wondering about how, whether or not, you know, Ty maybe changed her mind for a hot second, and if maybe that trust was betrayed by Summer. We don't know really anything about how that group interacted, how close they were, how all of these friendships and connections fell apart. Like, we really don't. So it could be that a lot of her animosity stems from Summer. We don't really know. Mm-hmm. Either way, it doesn't excuse being a terrible mother.
Agreed.
Yeah, Summer is still the gaping hole in our knowledge of Team Stark.
And also trying to use knowledge as a way to manipulate Yang into staying and being on her side. It's super gross.
Jerk. So I would like to concur with Katie's assessment. Raven, a hole. Just a hole.
Yeah, she's God.
Until we see more evidence to the contrary, she's an awful garbage person.
A-hole.
She knows it, though.
Yeah.
She's like, well, when you show up again, I may not be as kind. Well, you weren't kind this time around.
Meh. That's the thing that gives her a little bit of depth, is this self-awareness. And it's funny, because even though they're in a tent away from the eyes of the rest of her the rest of her troops, with the exception of Spring being right outside, she still feels like she's giving this performance. Mm-hmm. Like, she still has to be this leader who takes charge and is the one doling out the information to inform you, you simpleton. But she is self-aware, yeah, which gives her a little bit of depth. But at the end of the day, like, regardless of how she feels about the type of mother that she is, she's still also super a murderer. Like, pillaging villages murderer. not really qualifying for Mom of the Year.
No.
And again, until we see evidence to the contrary, I think, yeah, a-hole is a good way of categorizing her.
Yeah, and again, I'll answer all your questions vaguely and unhelpfully and then dangle the carrot in front of you while I give you what you want. Like, oh, well, you can get all the answers if you stay here, or you can go to your uncle. Like, what a dick move.
But it's also kind of, and we do need to move on, but I will say that it's also kind of interesting hearing her thoughts on Salem when we know Salem is looking at her as a player on the board. Even though Raven very much wants to stay out of it, she's a player on the board, a potential asset or threat. So Salem's got her eye on her regardless of what Raven wants to do.
Mm. Yeah. So,
kind of interesting. Okay, let's go ahead and speed through Crow's sort of subplot, which was...
Princess Ponies in chat says, what is with shows and their Shiro's going missing?
Aww.
God bless the Voltron fans watching this episode and going, oh no, not again. Someone get a clone to fill in.
They're at Haven Hospital.
They're in hospital. And yep, I'm sure Shiro will show up with a robot arm and he'll be great.
Mm-hmm. We've already got somebody with a robot arm.
Yes, oh, we do. No. There's
Yang's a clone. Hashtag Yang's a clone.
Oh my gosh. It's confirmed. All right. So Crow is searching all of his contacts for potential huntsmen who will help them try to, I guess, retrieve the Spring Maiden, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was what they were planning
to
do. Basically
make a stand on the bandit camp.
And
good luck, everybody.
All of his contacts, for one reason or another, are either missing or straight up dead. Most of them are considered missing. And I want to know, what did you guys think was more heartbreaking? The bartender or the now single dad?
The tiny child. And yeah. Now I'm sitting here wondering, how many of them were killed by the Nuklevi?
Oh, if like they sent them out to deal with that. I don't know.
Or even just they ran afoul of it nearby.
If you looked at a lot of the numbers on the board, a lot of them had been several weeks prior. How long has it been since Beacon fell? And we know, like I think Shiro said he's been missing, like the mission was in progress like 5 weeks prior. So like, again, time is, it's a little bit hard to keep track. We know it's been weeks, but I don't know. It's hard. We know that as...
Malachroma does it again. Hashtag RWBYABTV. Piccolo bartender.
Delightful because Nick Landis, a.k.a. Lanny Pator, did the voice of the bartender, and he used his Piccolo voice, which made me oh so happy.
He puts the knife through the door, and all I can think of is, dodge!
and it was spectacular. And for me, I liked both of those little elements, but I think I liked the bar story a little bit better, just because it said a lot about Shiro's relationship with both Crow and the bartender. And it, like, looking at Crow look at the board with all the huntsmen, it reminded me a lot of that scene from The Incredibles when Mr. Incredible realizes how many supers are dead.
All my friends are dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure to go to on Twitter, Jeff, G_OFF2886, left a DeviantArt about Crow seeing Ruby and Yang in the little girl asking if mommy has come home yet.
Please clap in chat says, I think Watts might be messing with the mission board and sending people into traps.
Sure.
I mean, that's entirely possible too, since the communication towers are down. The White Fang mentioned that they control communication flows. It's not that hard to assume that Watts wouldn't be manipulating things as well. I feel like that's a really good theory. But as his mission or attempt to try to find Huntsman sort of fizzles out and doesn't really amount to much, he does happen to get reunited with his niece and brings them home. And guys, okay, Mark, we'll go with you. How did you feel when you got to see the reunion?
Happy. Fantastic. Just because we're low on time, just yes. Like it was a wonderful moment that happened a lot sooner than I expected, but then I remembered we're 6 episodes in, so yeah, it's fantastic.
Katie, tears.
Video proof of my tears. I love that it was just Crow's terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day, and he just had this "and then there's you" moment with the portal opening up, and just that nice little subversion of expectations for him. It's like, oh, today has been terrible, but this is nice. This is good. Hi, you're a person I actually wanted to see.
Malachroma says, I like to imagine Crow's semblance kicks in and Yang just crashed right into him. It'd be amazing.
That's the cutaway that we didn't get to see.
Hashtag approved. Show me that blooper reel.
I really liked, again, seeing Ruby when face-to-face with her sister, she just becomes a child again.
I think the Weiss one got me more than than the Yang one did.
Mm-hmm. Both were, yeah, all of it. Because, again, it says a lot about Weiss's relationship with her own family members and how important this found family has become to all of them.
Come here and let us love you.
So, guys, that just about wraps it up. Let's go ahead and talk about iTunes really quick.
So really quick, we got 3 new reviews. Thank you so much. We are out of time, so we're not going to read them this week. We're going to read them next week. But if you want to be read on the show, make sure to go to iTunes. Just look up Rooster Teeth Reviews. Leave us a review there. Stars, 5 stars. The other stars don't work, obviously, so you have to leave 5 anyway. But we will read your review. If you are in another country, it will not post on our page, so please take a screenshot. Send it to us using the hashtag RWBYABTV. Thank you so much for everybody who has rated the new podcast. It's helping us show up a little bit more frequently, but thank you to everybody who has reviewed it so far. We will read these ones next week, as well as anybody else that leaves one, so please do.
But we also want to talk to you guys really quick, not only about iTunes, but about a special project that Rooster Teeth star and also friend of our show is putting on.
So really quickly, Samantha Ireland, if you don't know yet, on Twitter, @Ireland_Sam, she is doing a crowdfunding campaign for a short film that is going to be primarily staffed and cast by female professionals, whether those actors or technicians. She is writing it. The description is, in 1897 in West Texas, an elderly woman and her granddaughter encounter a dangerous stranger who is seeking revenge. In one fateful night, they must all come to face the wolves that walk among them and the ones inside themselves. She's not looking for a lot. She's looking for $11,000, which isn't that much for a short film, and every little bit helps. Just head on over there. And for Rooster Teeth fans, there is one where if you donate, I believe, $75, you can get a voicemail message either from Nora or as the Flower Scouts from Camp Camp. So if you don't just do it for Sam, which you should anyway because she's an amazing person and a wonderful creative, do it for that. Be a selfish Rooster Teeth fan and pay somebody to say something for you in a character voice. Support independent film, support women in film, support women independent filmmaking. Head over to her Twitter for more information.
Yeah, and again,
this is my voicemail. Leave a message.
Again, 75. Guys, I got chills listening to that description. The crowd, it's day 2 currently of the crowdfunding, so please go and support this movie. I need it.
They're almost a quarter of the way through after 2 days in, which is huge for a project like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so keep supporting.
Please, please, please do. Okay, do we have time really quick for rapid fire predictions?
No, we don't. Curses. It is past 8:00.
Curses. All right, guys. Well, sadly, that's going to do it for us tonight. Thank you all so, so much for watching. Katie, where can people go if they want to keep up with you?
You can follow me all over the social medias and on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is Kiaxet. If you want to see Megan's and my reaction to these episodes, those are up there. We actually just put up the video for the episodes 5 and 6 reactions earlier this evening, so wander over there, check it out. Things are awesome.
Hologram of Mark, where can they go to find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mark B. Donica, Twitch at Inventory Full PT. That's where you can find most of us, three-fifths of us, playing Ruby Grim Eclipse. It was a lot of fun. Stacy and I, we stream there regularly. It's a video game talk show. And we just made Affiliate, which is absolutely fantastic. We got more stuff coming from there. So please support us. If you have Amazon Prime, you can subscribe for absolutely free. So use your Twitch Prime subscription on us, and we won't disappoint you.
Thank you for putting up with me also last week. And
we're
going to
get you a controller and a headset.
I know. So you don't hear me like constantly pounding the little thing on my computer. Sorry.
You need a mouse.
I do indeed. But again, don't forget to follow Stacy at Stacy Shuttles and Patrick at P to the D's. I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I am also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with two Ks. Be sure to check that out. And be sure to also check out The Shadow Radio Recreation Season 2, where I do the voice of Margot Lane. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other aftershows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.